The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
All right, welcome into a numbers game on this Friday morning, February 14th. He's Kelly Bedlin. I'm Joe Cirala, taking you into your weekend. And Kelly, it's February 14th. You know what that means, my man.
What's that?
Happy Valentine's Day, brother.
Oh, I thought it was because the NBA went on break today. No? Oh, okay. No, yeah. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, there's no sports, so we are stuck trying to, you know, find someone to go on a date with.
Little pink and red. There we go.
I like it. Feeling festive. And shout out to our guy Darnell, huh? How about that? Walked in here, thought he was going for a fist bump, and then I'm like, the hell's in his hand? He's got chocolate for us on Valentine's Day. What a guy.
Maybe he secretly meant to smash the chocolate into your hand so you would just struggle all show with it.
Right, so I looked like Jimmy Butler last night?
Yeah, that's right.
Just give a little slap ass with the chocolate in his hand, and then you look like Jimmy Butler, who, by the way, there is no question he crapped himself during that game. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
That's indisputable, what happened to Jimmy Butler last night on the court. There is no doubt about that. That was like Paul Pierce some years back.
Hey, as long as you keep winning, who cares, right?
That's true. How about the line movement in that game? Whew. Let's start there. I mean, because when we were on air, it was Houston laying 6.5. It opened Golden State, Houston by a point? And then it closed Golden State 1.5?
Yeah, I guess that's what I caught this morning because I was writing something up for us of dog sweep the board. And then I was like, wait, what? And I'm looking over at a couple sites. I'm like, wow, it went all the way to Golden State 1 before we tipped off. And yeah, that's what we had.
1.5.
Yeah, here over at VSiN.com, 1.5, all the way to Golden State 1.5. So yeah, that was a bad read by some of the bettors and bookmakers. I mean, I brought up yesterday on the show, and I thought I was completely in lockstep with them. I was like, I think Steph probably sits. I think Jimmy Butler sits. And
right.
Tip to the cap to the Rockets and Warriors. They know where they're at in the Western Conference and need to pick up every one of these wins that they can to improve themselves in the standing, and especially going up against each other. Never know how that's going to work out when the playoff seeding comes down.
I'll tell you what, yesterday was such a weird day in the NBA because we talked about it on the show and, you know, we had Zach Cohen on and we doubled down on it when Zach came on. The injury reports were so inconsistent.
Yeah.
And you look at a game like Golden State Houston where we were certain Steph and Jimmy were probably going to be out because of the 5.5-point line movement towards the Rockets. And then, of course, you know, that gets that comes back with 8-point movement towards Golden State. Absolutely obscene line movement there. You look at the Miami-Dallas game. And you were talking about playing Bam props, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, Bam doesn't play.
Yep.
And, you know, who else was out for Miami? Terry Wiggins. They had that stomach illness. Bam, I don't think, was the stomach bug. I think he was a left knee contusion.
Yeah,
it said.
I don't. At least the night before, he wasn't listed with the illness stuff. So,
well,
yeah,
he was fantastic the night before.
You want to say kudos to the Mavericks, but we do kind of know that Miami was dealing with this stuff. But man, the Mavs keep picking up wins too. I can't knock this stuff, man. They've looked pretty way better than I was expecting.
30-26. I thought they would have folded by now. By the way, unrecognizable lineup for the Dallas Mavericks. My goodness, no Kyrie, obviously no Anthony Davis, no PJ Washington, no Lively, obviously. Klay Thompson didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this starting five. It really is like unrecognizable. The fact that they just that these guys put up 118 on Miami and won a basketball game. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. So this is what, 3-1 since the I'm sorry. That was 5 games ago. So Mavericks are 4-2 since the Luka trade, and one was an OT loss. Another one was another 2-point loss. That's pretty good.
They're hanging around.
And the news on Daniel Gafford this morning, who will sit out at least 6 weeks because of a grade 3 strain of the MCL in his right knee. That coming from ESPN. So things only getting worse for that front court in Dallas.
Yeah, they are really depleted down there. But hey, as long as they keep winning games and they keep going out there and stringing things together, some unlikely heroes. I mean, Maxwell Prosper, it's not like he had a wild game, but, you know, gets a start. This is a guy who usually sees just a few minutes, averages under 4 points per game, and he goes out there, gives them double digits in a starting effort. Minnesota, Oklahoma City, that one surprise you?
Yeah. I mean, really, yeah, brought it up yesterday on the show, right? If we're gonna complain about the bad beats all the time, recognize when you get lucky. The OKC win I had covering 2 nights ago was way worse. I had no reason getting that one home. Man, I thought my over was looking good in that game, though. And then we roll into the fourth quarter, Joe, and 34 combined points from the two teams.
Yeah, come on, they just mailed it in.
just goes under. But yeah, that's that was a good win for Minnesota. This is another game, like the Warriors we talk about, Warriors in Houston have just kind of given it, you know, people expecting before the All-Star break, maybe you slow down, mail it in a little bit. Both these teams, I mean, they threw everybody out there. This is a full strength type of game, and both these teams battling, and Minnesota coming out on top.
I will say that fourth quarter, though, that was about as big of a pre-All-Star break fourth quarter as you could ask for. Because yes, they looked like they both mailed it in by the fourth quarter. 34 combined points, like you mentioned. Clippers get home in overtime. They don't cover, but they beat Utah 120-116. How about the Pelicans beating Sacramento 140-133? I know the Kings were a popular play yesterday. Pelicans, they mailed it in. They sent Ingram to Toronto, 13-42, one of the worst records in the league, but they pull it out in OT.
Yeah, this is this Pelicans team has just been one of the most fascinating teams to be in the league for the past few years, because I'm a Zion fan, but the injuries are undeniable. But man, they still got some great young talent. Herb Jones is going to miss the rest of the year, it sounds like, but getting him back next year will be huge. Trey Murphy with another year of development. It's a fun young team. It's just interesting to see what they do with all these pieces. And Ingram, they had to move. They had to move one of these guys just because of what their salary cap was ended up looking like. They're going to have to pay. They got some big payments coming up from some of their younger stars. But Pelicans, man, I know it's a bad season, but it's a bright future ahead, in my opinion.
In college hoops, both ranked road favorites covered. Memphis went to USF, made a statement early, going up 15 at the half. They end up winning by 15, covering 7.5. Maryland goes to Nebraska, 1.5-point dogs in that one. So excuse me, I said road favorites. They're the ranked team, but they were the underdog in that one. So Nebraska would have been your system play if you're all about taking the unranked home favorite against a ranked road opponent. Maryland says not this time. And that system, Kelly's actually not been working lately. I've noticed it was hot and heavy to start the season, and then lately the higher ranked road teams have been coming out there winning.
Yeah, I think it's I think it's something to always be aware of, but you still got to pick and choose spots, right? Any of these kind of systems and trends we talk about, it doesn't mean fire blindly on any of them.
And this Maryland team, metric wise you know, I know that they're ranked 25th, they're not the sexiest team, but they do have similar metrics to teams like Michigan, teams like Arizona, teams like Marquette, who are all, I think, much more highly regarded. Maybe not Michigan, maybe they're about neck and neck. But Marquette, Arizona, much more highly regarded than Maryland. This is a team I'd start to look for. Big Ten tournament, maybe March Madness. They could make some noise.
I'm trying to pull up what they are in the outright market right now.
Maryland?
Yeah, because I heard someone 65-1 to win the NCAA tournament. I heard Drew Dinsick on the Deep Dive podcast just yesterday bring up that he recently got in on a ticket for them to win the tournament just because he thinks that there are some flaws at the top. These are very beatable teams at the top.
You know, look, I would say right now it's Duke, Alabama, Auburn, and then it's a wide open field. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not hard. You know, someone might look at that and say, well, you just gave three teams that seem like a sure thing, so it's got to be one of them. It's not hard for each of those teams to just have one-off performance get knocked off, and then it becomes wide open, you know? Yep. So I don't think there's a sure thing like UConn in recent years. Duke, Auburn, Bama, they are, I feel like, head and shoulders above the rest. They are in their own tier. But, I mean, if Alabama has a game where they get cold from beyond the arc, boom, they're exposed,
right,
you know?
Right.
So as far as the next tier, it is pretty wide open. And if you're going to take a team maybe like an Iowa State or like an Arizona, at that point, why not go for a Maryland or a Clemson and get way better odds? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we talked about Clemson yesterday with John Henson. I think they're a team in the outright market. I don't know if you have their number in front of you. I think Clemson is very live.
80-1.
Wow, longer shot than Maryland, huh?
Yep.
I love it. You should talk about them on your golf podcast. That's a long shot for you, right?
Yeah.
Speaking of the golf, what was your takeaway from the Genesis yesterday?
Oh, man, what a disaster. Hey, as I saw a couple of these tweets going around, but it was fair. The Genesis Invitational turned into a U.S. Open all of a sudden because the conditions were absolutely gross. We were worried about yesterday, but, man, the rain basically throughout the entire round, off and on, winds were gusting up to 25, 30 miles an hour. It was very evident, at least early in the day. I was watching a bunch right after we got done with the show. It was evident that greens were really tough for these guys to figure out with the wind, with the rain soaking these POA greens, and then the wind blowing as much as it was. There were some missed putts as bad as I've seen in a while. So really looking forward to today's action. Conditions are expected to be a little bit calmer, so we shouldn't have as much chaos out there on the court, Joe. But, man, you still had – it's tough when you know you're battling in tough conditions and then you still see Scotty Scheffler just starting to cruise. I think there's Denny McCarthy. This is going to happen every once in a while. Denny McCarthy's your leader right now, 4 under par. Then you got Seamus Power, Patrick Rogers, 3 under par. Denny McCarthy, one of the best putters on the PGA Tour. Putter got hot yesterday. Sometimes he's just going to be able to. It's hard for him to win tournaments. It's hard for him to do that over 4 rounds consecutively, Joe. But for one round, he's always a good first round leader. Look, I think because of stuff like this, gained over 4 strokes on the field with the putter. So that was massive. Scottie Scheffler's only 2 shots off. Listen to him on his post round interview. Man, for us that have been betting golf and Scottie Scheffler getting in the way so many times, I did not like what I heard post round from him, Joe, because he was talking about how he thought he was in the best condition of his life this offseason, right before he cut open his hand on old Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, whatever it was, and had to miss a couple weeks and work on that. But he was saying how he's starting to get his swing back, starting to get the feel back, and I'm getting real nervous about how good Scheffler's going to be going forward.
Would you consider him at 2-1 here, or is that just not enough?
It was the first price I looked at. Ah, man, I can't blame you if you go and bet it with him 2 shots off the lead. I'd probably give it to today, though. I usually don't get involved. We'll talk about some of the live outright prices. I did pick out a couple that I thought could work if you really wanted to make a bet today. I usually don't get involved in round matchups or even in tournament, just picking outrights till about the 3rd round. I usually want to see 2 rounds unfold, and especially with the weather being as crazy it was yesterday. Let's get a calm day in there first.
Scotty plus 210 on the live number. Rory 7-1. Denny McCarthy 12-1, your current leader. More golf, more college hoops. On the other side, it's a numbers game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The numbers game continues. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo, taking you through this Friday, February 14th edition of The Big Show as we get you folks ready for the weekend. And we'll start to get you ready for the NFL Draft as we welcome into the program via the Progressive Guest Line our friend, NFL Draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports, my guy Joe DeLeon. Joe, how you doing, man? There is no face I'd rather wake up to on Valentine's Day than yours. I just want to make that very clear from the start.
That's so sweet of you to say, Joe. I'm doing great. I tweeted out. I was very excited to get to talk to you today, and it wouldn't be a true Valentine's Day if we didn't get to share this very special moment. Kelly, it's nice to meet you, by the way.
Yeah, Joe, it's great to have you on the show, but I echo that same sentiment, okay? Who else would I rather spend Valentine's Day with than you two, okay? Come on.
I mean, a couple of good-looking Joes. It's a great way to start your morning, right? Joe, I want to start, backtracking a little bit. It feels like the Super Bowl. We spent 2 weeks, obviously. For those of you as part of the numbers game audience who don't know this, Joe is a regular on Cashing Out, comes on every week. So we spent 2 weeks previewing this game, leading up to it. The 2 weeks felt like 2 years. And now, just 5-6 days later, it feels like the Super Bowl was already a year ago. It feels like old news. But being a draft expert and analyst and a college football expert yourself, Kansas City right now, the second shot on the board, 7-1 to win it next year. I mean, where do you see this Chiefs team going in the draft? Where do you see them improving as they're a little strapped for cash this offseason?
Well, one of my favorite early futures bets, and I know it's crazy early to be throwing one of these out there, I really like the idea of the Chiefs getting back there and winning it again. If there's been a team over the last 5 years that has done such a great job of identifying their weaknesses and improving, it's the Kansas City Chiefs. If we go back even further than that, what helped the Patriots during their dynasty? It was the fact that Bill Belichick, before he completely collapsed as a talent evaluator when he was making those general manager decisions, before that, they were great at finding talent late in drafts, on day two, on day three. I feel like that this Kansas City front office has been great at improving. The last time that they fell short and they didn't win a Super Bowl, they put together a tremendous draft class with Trent McDuffie, George Karlaftis. There was just such an effort put towards rebuilding the roster, and those guys are key contributors right now. I think the most important thing for them, though, taking that next step, they need to address aggressively their offensive line, and they need to find better receiving options and maybe also running back. This is that running back class that is extremely loaded for them to get guys on day two and on day three. But at the back end of the first round, where they're sitting, they should really strongly consider drafting somebody, like a Gray Zabel from North Dakota State, who would be a fantastic player, Jonah Savanea, who would be great at guard from Arizona. And at receiver, this is not a great receiver class, which does not bode well for the Chiefs. But someone like a Matthew Golden from Texas, I think, is worth considering. Or a little bit later on, Jaden Higgins from Iowa State is somebody that I really, really like. If they don't address either of those positions in this draft effectively, then I'm taking away that stance that I think they can go back and win a Super Bowl this upcoming year. But I feel pretty confident that they're going to be strategic in approaching it.
Yeah, I don't know how many picks they have in this year's draft, but I'd probably use almost every single one of them on offensive
six
line.
Six total?
Okay, yeah. So at least five of them should probably go to the offensive line. I'm with you there, Joe. I'm just hitting the futures board real quick. Anything that jumped out to you? Because I was a little surprised with a couple of the openers. We're usually not. We get these odds the day after the Super Bowl every single year. Usually there's not any huge surprises to me, but that couple stood out and a couple have moved. Is there any that you gravitated to right away?
The one that caught my attention the most was the Bengals at 17-1. And part of me kind of wonders if that's going to end up moving up after this offseason. The first thing that they addressed was moving on from Lou Anarumo, who's a great defensive coordinator. But the guy that they hired from Notre Dame, Al Golden, was already a part of the staff at one point. That is a very underrated decision to go with somebody who at one point was a position coach, who has familiarity with the system. There is no learning curve. There is no chemistry building between him and you know, the current whole coaching staff and some of the guys that were already on the roster. So I love Al Golden as a DC. I think he's a brilliant defensive mind. That is going to help them improve. And a lot of this too, last draft, they were aggressive at addressing their defense, but they had a lot of young dudes that were not really ready to contribute to the degree that they needed. The thing that held them back was their defense being a mess. It had nothing to do with Joe Burrow. He was so good that he was in the MVP conversation despite missing the playoffs. So if there's one team out there this upcoming NFL offseason and this NFL season that has just a really nice draft class and takes this huge leap forward, I think that the Cincinnati Bengals are worth considering.
Yeah, they've already moved down a tick from 18-1 to 17-1. I expect that to probably get, you know, a little shorter than 15-1 here in the not so distant future when it comes to the Bengals. All right, Joe, what about the champs? What about the Eagles? Howie Roseman has put on clinic after clinic when it comes to the draft, whether it's pretty much just going down to Georgia and swooping up their entire championship winning defense. I mean, you got Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, N'Kobe Dick. The Eagles are the Georgia Bulldogs. It's absolutely insane. What he did last year with Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean was, I think, a bit of a surprise, doubling down on that position. And both of those guys had rookie of the year caliber campaigns. What do the Eagles do here?
Yeah, I think that for them in this upcoming draft, there's not really any major priorities that they need to go after, because you just mentioned there that this roster is not only loaded, but it also has depth. For me, it was like, and I did a mock draft a few weeks ago before the Super Bowl. It was kind of hard to pinpoint what makes sense in the first round. They're probably going to be a trade back candidate because there's nothing super urgent for them to go after. They can continue to accumulate draft in a draft class that has a lot of really good defensive prospects. But I feel like adding into the mix another receiver for them is important. We know that A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are amazing, but you get a third option with Jahan Dotson, who didn't really do a whole lot after they traded for him. The one thing, though, that I have a little bit of pause with talking about them repeating, I feel like a lot of things had to go right for them in order for them to go on this run and then play as dominantly as they did in the Super Bowl. And the very specific thing I'm referring to is the health of Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley is the best running back in football. He's one of the greatest running back prospects that we've ever seen. He is insanely talented. But the thing with him is we've seen inconsistencies with his availability. He'll have a great season, and then the next year he'll end up getting banged up. It's the reality that we live in with running backs. So I have a little bit of pause seeing how important he was for their success, for Jalen Hurts' success, for the offense just being so much better the way that they played this year. I'm a little bit off knowing that if Saquon gets banged up and he starts to miss periods of time, or he's out for the playoff next year, that is going to impact their chances of repeating.
Well, what I'll say to that, Joe, is first off, you're right. No Saquon, no Super Bowl, right? And people could say, oh, well, he only had 50-something yards. Yeah, he was their best player the entire, you know, path to getting there. And then in the Super Bowl, Kansas City's entire game plan revolved around taking him out of the game. And so then Jalen Hurts and the pass game were able to go and attack Kansas City's defense. But absolutely no Saquon, no Super Bowl. Where I'll disagree with you is think about why Saquon's been hurt so much. You and I are both Giants fans, man. The Giants haven't put out a competent offensive line in over a decade by now.
Well, my counter to your counter, though, that doesn't prevent him from getting hit, though. Just because he's able to go so much further down the field before getting hit at the line of scrimmage doesn't mean that he's going to not, you know, get contacted by a defender later on into a play. I vaguely remember when he tore his ACL against the Bears. It wasn't like a huge gain, and I'm trying to remember exactly what had happened. But he was trying to string out a play, and he was trying to create space for himself, and he just got driven way too hard into the ground that led to his foot planting awkwardly. So the running back position, you can get hurt doing anything. You can get hurt standing still. I'm being hyperbolic, but it's a position
I would hope.
Where you take enough hits throughout a season, wear and tear starts to factor in, and you could tear it in open field just trying to make a cut. And I'm not trying to pitch that Saquon's going to get hurt and that I want him to get hurt. But all I'm trying to say here is that it is such a hard position to bank on health. The best guys are the ones who have been the most healthy. And I'm sure that Saquon is going to have another great season.
Yo, final minute. Let's get to the draft here. Obviously, we'll be talking about the draft a lot in the coming months. Cam Ward odds on to go number one to Tennessee, minus 120. Behind him, Abdul Carter, plus 225. Shador is 4-1. Travis Hunter, a little longer than that, plus 425. And then Jackson Dart, 40-1. So really, you're dealing with four guys that are shorter than 5-1. Where do you see the Titans going? Potentially, could a move like an Aaron Rodgers mix up where quarterbacks go and mix up the top of the draft?
I think that it's open-ended on what they're going to do. They could either go quarterback, or they could end up approaching defense, taking Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter. But for the betting angle specifically, I'm sticking with taking Cam Ward to be this first overall pick, because if they decide to trade out, anyone who moves up to draft a quarterback is going for Cam Ward. The more that I've evaluated him and Shador Sanders, the more that the general public has evaluated him and the NFL has dug in, there's a clear difference in the talent level. Shador Sanders is super high floor. He's super talented. He can be a great pro. But Cam Ward's got the big arm and can turn into a top 10 quarterback or even better in the NFL.
Yo, no one's more in tune with this stuff than you. You put me on to Cam Ward when he was back at Incarnate Word. I want to give you credit for that one. Enjoy your Valentine's Day. Send Christina my best. Appreciate you coming on. Follow him on Twitter at Joe DeLeon. More Numbers Game after the break.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome into a Numbers Game with me, Joe Serrallo, alongside Kelly Bidlin, getting you ready for your weekend here on this Friday, February 14th edition of the show. And with the weekend comes a lot of Premier League action on tap. Who better to talk about it with than our friend Paul Carr from True Media Sports and, of course, the Expected Value podcast? Gave out some great Champions League winners, some incredible value just the other day. Let's see if we can do it again with the Premier League. Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, we didn't no Premier League last weekend because it was the FA Cup. So we're getting back in the swing of things. We're about 2/3 of the way through the season, so we're starting to head down the stretch.
And we've got a match about to start. No official play from you on it, but I'd love to get your thoughts on this Brighton-Chelsea match.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Brighton's, I'd say they've underachieved a little bit all season from kind of what people expected them to be. Chelsea's been playing pretty well on the whole, and Nico Jackson is the big question mark here because he's out. He's their top scorer, forward up top. He's out for this game. So I don't really have a play. I guess if I had to, I'd do something like Brighton draw no better, a little better than even money if I had to play something, but no official play here. I think this will be a pretty interesting game, but I don't have a good feeling about which way it might go.
Paul, you've been on a tear recently. We were talking about during the break, over eight units over the show over the past month on the show, on an absolute tear. Champions League, it feels like I can remember about one losing day for you over that time. I know we got a few plays to get to. I did want to just ask you a question, though, for people that are getting trying to get into betting soccer, whether it's Premier League, Champions League, any of the European leagues, just kind of biggest piece of advice you have for what people should be looking at, you know, stat wise or what, how they should begin their process of learning how to learning and advancing handicapping soccer.
Yeah. And there's obviously a lot of different approaches. There's some things that are just very practical. For example, we'll talk about this next week when we hit the Champions League second legs, where there can be extra time. And it's just when you're in these knockout tournaments, it's know what's at stake and know what teams have to do. Like there'll be some weird lines next week because a draw will get a team through or they can lose and still advance. So just the simple mechanics of making sure you know what you're betting and what the team motivations are probably the first thing, because I think everyone who has started betting soccer has made a bet and you think it loses or you think it wins, but you realize you made a regulation bet and there was extra time and you get it mixed up as far as what you actually bet. So that's kind of the biggest thing is just make sure you understand it, you know, what's the two-way lines, the three-way lines, regulation types of things like that.
That would just be something that I would
basic
do.
Basic stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I did it. I've done it. Everyone's done it when they start betting soccer. You think you won something and you realize it was a two advanced instead of a 90-minute bet or something along those lines.
Yeah, two advanced and to lift the trophy, right? Make sure you're looking at those markets, especially when we get into these tournaments like you're talking about.
Paul, it's great advice. You know I'm a novice when it comes to betting soccer, but as someone who grew up on Long Island, I'm a bit of an expert when it comes to Southampton. What's your play for this Southampton-Bournemouth game?
Yeah, I think we're going to get some goals here one way or the other. I have over 3.5 at plus 130. This may look a little odd. You have teams that are 10th and 15th in total goals this season out of the 20 Premier League teams, but they're 3rd and 6th in total expected goals. And again, expected goals, just how many goals you're expected to score based on the shots that you take. And both teams are just run a little bit cold offensively, but 4 of Southampton's last 5 have had 4-plus goals. And this is a stylistic bet as well, in the sense that Southampton gives the ball away at the back. Their defenders try to hang on to it. They give it away a lot. And Bournemouth presses with their attackers as well as any team in the league. They have the third most possessions that start in that attacking third. So I think Bournemouth's press will give Southampton trouble, which will lead to goals. So I like goals here. Plus 130 on the over 3.5.
Right, like it. Continuing on Saturday, Crystal Palace and Everton. Another total play for you here. What you got, Paul?
Yeah, this is a little bit of a zag. It's over 2.5 at plus 120. Crystal Palace, Everton, you would just call them kind of under type of teams this season. They're both in the bottom 5 in goals scored. But again, things are trending up. Everton has a new manager who was their old manager. His name's David Moyes. And three of the last 5 have had 4-plus goals and 2.5-plus expected goals. And they've scored in 4 straight Premier League games with multiple goals in 3 of those. So I'm not saying that he's opening the team up, but he is giving them more opportunities to score than they kind of had under the previous regime, which was under Sean Dyche, was much more defensive. And Palace has been better lately in attack. They've scored twice in 4 of the last 6. I might hate this pick 10 minutes in when it looks like both teams are fine with a 0-0, but getting plus 120 on over 2.5, I will take that chance.
And Paul, you've been killing it with the plus money plays. Of course, I want to, you know, give some acknowledgement, give some credit to that plus 290 over, who was that? Man City, Real Madrid?
Real Madrid, yeah.
Yeah, that's over 4.5.
1-1. Yeah, 1-1 in the 80th minute and over 4.5 hits.
But, no sweat. I mean,
part of the bet was like these teams get weird late in general, especially Real Madrid. Things just open up and things get crazy. So, again, obviously it worked out really well. My favorite, the stoppage time winner, but that was part of the play, is that things get loose late and crazy stuff can happen.
What a finish for you. That game's 1-1 in the 80th. You had Juventus, which won in the, I think, 82nd minute. It was a strong day of finishes in the Champions League for you. So you've been giving out these plus money overs with pretty good success. How about an under? What do you like in that Liverpool match?
Yeah, I'll take the under 3.5 here at minus 110. Wrote a lot of Liverpool unders early in the season when they were really just kind of choking the life out of the game with possession. They're not quite doing that as much now as they used to, but they're also not the rip-roaring attacking team they were under Jurgen Klopp last season. They've scored 2 or fewer in 8 of their 11 home games, and this game is at home, and they've only conceded more than once in 2 of their 9 home games. So it's always a little scary to bet an under on a Liverpool home game, because you just think, you know, like any team at their home venue, which is, you know, raucous and just a classic venue like Anfield is, it's a little bit scary because you just think they're going to get rolling and hang 4 on Wolverhampton, which they might. But this Wolves team is not very good. They're really fortunate that they're not in the relegation zone now. They could still fall in there. I just think this is like a 2-0, 3-0 type of game for Liverpool where they're in control. They don't go nuts, but they, you know, it's a lunch pail type of game. You know, you're at home, get your 3 points, go on your way and keep that lead safe in the Premier League title race.
All right, Paul, I'm going to bring you back to the top goal scorer market because as you can tell,
it's changing.
You know, I'm a little obsessed with this. The Erling Haaland, I feel like I've been trying to get involved with it at some point during the season. I haven't yet. I think it's pretty interesting, though, to see Mo Salah now with a 3-goal lead. I know you're on the under with the Liverpool game on Sunday. He's got a 3-goal lead, though, right now. He's moved to the favorite, minus 125. Haaland plus 140. I was really hoping to get involved here, but I was hoping for a longer number. How do you look at this market right now?
Yeah. Kind of feeling similar to that in that seeing Haaland at plus 140, I don't remember seeing him that long over the past several years. So that my first instinct is like, we got to jump on that. Is he really going to make up three?
Right.
And maybe four? It depends on your book if they pay out a dead heat or whatever they do if guys tie. That's tough at just one plus 140. It's not like Salah is slowing down or anything and Liverpool is going to have to push. The only case I can really make for Haaland here is Liverpool rests Salah toward the end of the season. Like they clinch the title with, say, 5 games left, which they possibly could, maybe not that many. And he sits out a few games because they're deep in Champions League or something.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, City's going to be pushing for top four. So that's the only case I can really make. Like maybe he just gets like 3 more games than Salah does from kind of a Man City's got to win this perspective.
So unfortunately, we're still priced correctly pretty much. Yeah.
I think so. I would want close to plus 200.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping to find. All right, maybe I'll shop around, see if I can.
Well, you mentioned City making a push for top four. While we're talking futures, Liverpool's pretty in command to win the league, but is there any value in that top four market? Anything that intrigues you there?
Nothing crazy. I still kind of like Newcastle. They're about plus 225. I have a future on them from before the season at almost that identical price, so it's not something I'm going out to play. But yeah, you have essentially 4 teams for 2 spots. So I feel like Newcastle's a couple points off of fourth right now. So I kind of like that. The one X factor in all of this is, and this is a little bit complicated, but the Premier League's probably going to get 5 Champions League spots, which means a team could be in fifth going to the last few days and not have to push for top four, which is a little bit strange, but it depends on how all the English teams do in Champions League and the other European competitions this year. So that's just kind of a wrinkle to keep an eye on. Like Newcastle or any team could be in fifth going in the last couple of days and be fine with that, depending on how everything else shakes out, both in Europe and in the Premier League.
Speaking of Newcastle, they've got a match with Man City tomorrow. Man City laying 5 cents, Newcastle plus 245, draw 3-1 there. Anything on that board that intrigues you? Any lean in that contest?
Yeah, I was thinking about the Newcastle double chance at minus 120. I've played a lot of double chances against Man City this season successfully. I'm not ready to say Man City is back in this game, but you know they've looked okay. I just still don't quite trust them. I mean, we saw it against Real Madrid where they were ahead 2-3 times and ended up losing that match. And that's kind of what City's been all season, just not quite clicking, especially defensively. So I feel like Newcastle has the personnel with Alexander Isak and company to really take advantage of a weak Man City defense. So I would lean toward Newcastle double chance minus 120, or maybe you can find a better price if you shop around.
Paul, as always, sensational stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. Thanks for hopping on.
You bet. Happy Valentine's. Have a good weekend.
Yeah, you as well. Our buddy Paul Carr. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Paul Carr. Check out the Expected Value podcast, too. That guy gives out a lot of value. That's for sure. A lot of plus money plays and a lot of them hit.
Yep. Man, he's been on hell of a run here the past couple months on this show. I'm just trying to find, I'm shopping soccer prices right now, man. I'm trying to find Haaland at like plus 170. I think I'd get involved. That guy's a beast.
You know, I fell into the same trap that you've warned me about because I don't bet soccer. And you said that you and Gil sometimes, Paul, come on, give out some great plays. And you'll be like, you know what? I'm going to play that. And then you get home after the show and you settle down and you make yourself a soy latte like Kelly loves to do. And you realize, oh, shoot, the match already started. Yeah. That happened to me with Juventus the other day. I was going to play it. And then I look and I'm like, oh, 40th minute. Very cool.
Yeah, it happens to me way too often. Yeah,
those soy lattes just take too long. They're too time consuming. For you to make.
It's always, you know, you get done, we got some post-show stuff we got to do, maybe run an errand or two on the way home, and then I'm settled down at my desk working on some NBA stuff for the day, working on next day's show, and then I look up, like you said, and it's, we're in the 20th minute.
Yep, that's exactly what happened to me, and it would have been a sweat, you know, maybe it would have been a winner, but maybe I was okay without the stress in my life. Speaking of your NBA stuff for the day, 3-point contest. That's what we have to cap up next on A Numbers Game. He's Kelly Bidlin. I'm Joe Cirillo.